Shot with Cap and J Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. That's why I say
amen, I should. Every morning here on Cap and J Hood at 8 a.m., we play Shot or No Shot. Charlie Bevin's with us this morning. What's up, Charlie?
Not much, Tyler. How are you today?
I am fantastic. Jesse Rogers here with us as well. It's time for Shot or No Shots.
And it's brought to us by Club Hawthorne. Put a little more action into your weekend at one of Hawthorne's 16 newly remodeled betting bars, or bet the races from the home or on the go in the Club Hawthorne mobile wagering app. Good morning to Secretariat, of course. And register at Club Hawthorne now for a chance at $12,000 on January 1st.
All right. What do we got?
All right, boys. Well, it was another Bears loss this weekend as they simply just kind of ran out of gas against a far superior Bills team and only put up 13 points. After a pretty electrifying offensive stretch in the middle of the season, the offense has been held to no more than 20 points in their last four games. So shot or no shot, the Bears offense has been figured out.
I'll say shot because we knew there'd be a moment where they would take away the rushing attack from Fields, right? We knew they would at least try to. Maybe it was the weather. Maybe it was the Bills. Maybe it was a combination. But we've seen this for a couple weeks now that they've adjusted. And it was bound to happen. And now this offseason, the plan by Getsy's got to be to come up with the right balance. The idea, of course, is to confuse the defense. When they think you're going to run, you pass. When they think you're going to pass, you run. And when they think you're going to run with your running back, you run with your quarterback, and vice versa. So finding that right balance is the next test for Getsy, obviously, and also advancing the passing game to a point where the other team is scared of it. So, yes, I'd say shot at that.
I'm going to say a no shot. You've played two of the best defenses in all of football over the last 2 weeks in the Bills and the Eagles. And I think that Luke Getsy, I mean, listen, he's a first-year play caller. You're not going to have a perfect game every time out there like we did see for that stretch of games from the Patriots game through like the Falcons game where they were putting up 30 points every single week, it felt like. So I'm going to say a no shot there. I think that you just went up against two really good defenses, and I'd expect those numbers to get back into the high 20s and 30s as you close the season against the Lions and Vikings.
All right, Velus Jones Jr. had his best game as a pro on Saturday, flashing his skills as both the kick returner and as a deep threat, as we saw in that big play to him over the middle. The cupboard is quite empty in the Bears receiving room due to injuries, and Velus will get a chance to prove himself. Whether or not he may have exactly earned that chance is a little bit up for debate. But shot or no shot, Velus Jones now has the most at stake on the Bears in the home stretch of this season.
That's a no shot for me. I think that there's actually a more important piece in that receiving room, and that is Chase Claypool. And even though he didn't play last week against and the week before against the Eagles as well, I think that Chase Claypool, you gave up some major draft capital, some capital that right now is looking like it could be the 33rd overall pick and maybe even the 32nd overall pick if the Bears do get into the number one overall spot. And that is because the Miami Dolphins are without a first round pick this year. So you could be looking at a Bears team who, for all the years that we've seen no first round picks, could have theoretically had two first round picks on bookends of the NFL draft this year. And one of them you did surrender in the trade for Chase Claypool. So I think that Chase Claypool is the one that's got the most at stake of any Bear for the rest of this season. You just got to hope he's on the field for it.
Yeah, no shot. I agree with no shot. And I'll go with Tyler's analysis there. I agree with you. And I don't know, a guy that has, what, six catches on the year. I'm not sure I can make him the big centerpiece the last couple games. Like he's going to. Maybe he can leave a decent impression in coaches' minds, I suppose, with Velus Jones Jr., but I'm going to say no shot for pretty much what Tyler had to say there. I think Claypool would have more at stake than him.
All right. Well, with the continued – I'm glad you actually mentioned this, Tyler, because that leads into my next question. Because with the continued losing by the Bears, the second-round pick they gave to the Steelers will now be in the top two of the second round. And like you said, Tyler, it's going to be even more valuable because that Miami pick is not there. This pick could very well be for an impact player. And when you consider the lack of production from Chase Claypool, the Steelers may have seriously fleeced Ryan Poles. Shot or no shot, the Claypool trade is already a disaster.
That's a no shot. I think it's too early to tell, and obviously the injury hasn't helped that case, certainly, but I still think you're looking at an NFL player who has a track record of some success within the confines of the league. I think that when you look at the trade as a whole, it's tough to really tell in a rebuilding year when you're acclimating a player to a complex system that Luke Getsy has installed in Chicago. So I'm going to say a no shot there, but that's obviously something that Bears fans are going to be really on edge with over the course of the next season, because you did give up a lot to go out and get Chase Claypool. You could have potentially given up a first-round pick when it's all said and done.
I'm going to say shot. Just get open, dude. Don't worry about anything else. Just get open. Run the pattern. Get open. We've seen other wide receivers switch teams and have an impact. Granted, different skill sets, but OBJ, right? He did pretty well last year with the Rams, right? When they won it all.
But even that took some time. That's like saw Odell come alive in the end of the season and then into the playoffs. Like, it was a little bit of a struggle, if I'm remembering correctly, when he first made the transition over to the Rams.
One of us is remembering it wrong, and I'm sure it's me, but I feel like he had a little bit quicker of a impact. But either way, he had an impact, and it didn't take that long. So I look, we're asking, is there a shot? It's a bust. And I think the answer is yes. What has he done to do anything to tell you differently? What has he shown you at all? So I'm going to say there's a shot at it. Yes.
Charlie.
Okay, after an embarrassing 51-14 loss to the LA Rams, Denver has fired their head coach, Nathaniel Hackett, not even a full calendar year after hiring him. Hackett and Matt Eberflus were both hired by their respective teams this offseason, and Hackett even interviewed with the Bears. So my question is, shot or no shot? Ryan Poles moving a different direction than Nathaniel Hackett is a good sign for the Bears GM eye for talent.
I'm going to say a no shot there. I think that you come in and you interview a lot of people through the head coach hiring process. I'm not going to say that you skipping out on Nathaniel Hackett. And if I'm remembering correctly too, wasn't Hackett hired before Eberflus? I want to say he was one of the early cycle. Maybe I'm misremembering that, but
the big thing with Hackett is I'm still convinced that they hired Hackett thinking they could get Rodgers.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's still the prevailing thought in Denver.
He was definitely hired before Eberflus. Yeah.
So I'm going to say a no shot there. I don't think that going out and hiring a coach is necessarily a indication of talent seeking. I think I like what I've seen among Matt Eberflus more than a lot of the first year head coaches, but I don't think that is a full on indication of whether or not you found or are a good evaluator of coaching talent.
I need my first time out of the half. I need that question again. Read it again.
It was
Tyler went on and on. I forgot how you worded it.
Yeah, well, so after firing Nathaniel Hackett, not even a calendar year, and the Bears deciding not to hire him. Shot or no shot, Ryan Poles moving in a different direction other than Nathaniel Hackett is a good sign for the Bears GM's eye for talent.
I suppose reluctantly I'll say shot. Reminds me that, remember, didn't the Colts like Matt Nagy before they hired Frank Reich? It turned out to be wrong about both guys, right? So let's hope that Poles isn't wrong about both guys as well, or right, or whatever. Let's just hope it doesn't happen the same way, where both coaches hired in the same year get fired a couple years later. Now he's not going to get fired this year, so he's already outlasted Nathaniel Hackett, Eberflus. I'll say shot. Maybe there's something there, because boy, the guy that hired Nathaniel Hackett, it looks terrible right now. So I'll go that Ryan Poles did a good job not hiring him.
All right, this Christmas weekend was filled with football. We had a game on Thursday, a bunch on Christmas Eve, and three on Christmas Day on Sunday. Plus another game last night. Kind of stepped on the NBA's Christmas Day, too. I don't know about you, but it made this weekend even more enjoyable than it usually is for me. Shot or no shot, the NFL should do what they can to always ensure Christmas Day football.
That's a shot. I actually really liked having the balance, and I didn't feel like I was overwhelmed with games. I wouldn't mind seeing kind of the split once you get to this part of the year where college football is in its bowl season and Saturdays are a little bit more open. I wouldn't mind seeing more of a split. I know that the NFL, they like to try to get three in for the three in on Saturdays, sometimes one or two in on Saturdays as well. But I really like having the Christmas Day games. The one thing is if Christmas is on like a Tuesday or something. That certainly complicates things, or a Wednesday. I don't think that the league would go for something like that. But when it falls where it did, like it did this year, absolutely, that's a shot.
Well, grandma's not going to like this, but yeah, shot. I mean, and even if it's Tuesday, you know, there's football every day, and they've figured out how to make it work in terms of time, you know, time off and all that stuff. Maybe you don't play again. Maybe you play them following Thursday. If you play Tuesday on Christmas,
yeah,
you play the Thursday game a week. I don't know. But yes, shot that they if they can make money off, if they can get ratings off of it, it's a day off. Everyone's at home. Like I said, maybe not every family would like that. Some would, some wouldn't. But yeah, shot that they would. They look at anything that happens and then take that to their internal meetings and focus groups. And if they can make money, if they can get ratings, they will find a way to make it work. So I'm going to say shot.
All right, that is shot or no shot. Thank you, Charlie, for that list of questions there. They do it every single morning here on Cap'n Jay Hood at 8 a.m. We're going to talk with Albert Breer coming up at 8:35. Courtney Cronin at 9, a little before 9:20.
Can I ask this question, though, for the rest of the show?
You got
we have open lines.
All right. Again, let's hear it, Jess.
This is it. Kind of crystallizing what I talked about at the end of last hour. What's worse? What was worse? Now that I've told you what went on last night at the United Center, or if you watched the game at least, what was worse? The performance on the court, or the fact that the United Center actually did the wave? I want to hear which one is worse in your mind.
All right. Performance on the court or performance in the stands last night at the United Center after the Bulls get blown out by the lowly, lowly Houston Rockets. When we come back, we will answer that question and also go around the NFL as well. That's coming up next on Cap and Jay Hood.
Cap and Jay Hood. Mornings on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Cap and Jay Hood. Mornings.
ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app.
Nick Foles sucks. He sucks.
I'm just a fan. I'm not a football evaluator.
I love the Green Bay Packers.
The guy is drunk, but there he goes.
This is not Detroit, man. This is the Super Bowl.
I want winners.
He starts to come and he pulls out.
This is a really thickly built guy.
I mean, what's the answer you're looking for on these things here?
Every week here on Cap'n Jay Hood, we go around the NFL, and Charlie Bevins is with us today. He's our football chariot. Charlie, what do you have?
All right, well, let's start with the biggest news of the last 24 hours. We touch on it in Shot or No Shot, but the Broncos have fired Nathaniel Hackett after going 4-11 in 15 games. It was his first year, and like I said, not even a full calendar year. What a disaster this was for the Broncos, because now you're looking for a head coach, and you have no way out of this Russell Wilson situation. Obviously, everybody, like, it's an NFL job. Everybody's going to want it. But if you're, like, the premium tier of coaching candidates, like, they're not going to have their first pick of coaches.
You know what's funny is I saw the odds yesterday for the next coach of the Denver Broncos, and leading the way was Sean Payton. There's zero chance in hell Sean Payton wants to coach this football team.
And apparently he wants to bring Fangio with him, too. Like, hey, Fangio's not going back to Denver.
Nope. Not a chance there.
Let me say this. I agree with you for the most part, but I guess you could talk yourself into saying you can only go up. You do have a proven quarterback. You had a pretty good defense this year. If you even win six games next year, you're going to look like a genius. Like, you could talk yourself into, I got nothing to lose and a lot to gain if you really wanted to.
Here's what I'll say is, and I think, too, another component to this is the fact that you're without a first-round pick this year as well, because that obviously went the other way in the Russell Wilson trade. But I think that with this Broncos team, there's an offensive coordinator out there that says, I can fix Russ. As bad as he's looked this year, there's an offensive coordinator out there who wants a head coaching job, and it'll be some young, up-and-coming mind who is going to say to themselves, I can fix Russ. But they may also fall into that same trap of Nathaniel Hackett of, all right, first-time head coach, haven't really done a whole lot at the NFL level, and, oh, I'm going to call plays on top of trying to run the other 53 players and manage all of them and the entire coaching staff. No, I think we're seeing, and it's one of the big reasons why I have a ton of respect for Matt Eberflus and what he's done, is even though he is this defensive mind, He doesn't call the defensive plays. He stepped back. And he knows, I want to run this entire organization and not just plant my flag in one side of the football and try to micromanage that entire side of the game.
This whole thing has brought up the whole topic of worst 1 year or less coaching stints, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Urban Meyer's names come up. I mean, in Chicago, we'd have to look back at a few. I mean, Boylan was what exactly? Was it a full year?
A little bit over.
You may not know this name. Going back to the Blackhawks in 2000, a guy named Alpo Suhonen. Now, it did last the year, but he was terrible. They're like 29 and 41, like 1 year or less. It doesn't happen often, right? Usually you give a guy more than a year. I'm thinking in Chicago, Boylan was more than one, right? I didn't look it up. A little bit more than one. Suhonen, who else is 1 year or less? Not many, right?
Yeah.
Not many. You have to be really bad not to be given a full year.
A lot of times, something off the field has to happen. But like,
yeah,
that was kind of the case with, I mean, Urban Meyer, there were the issues on the field and on the practice field, but there
Didn't
was
he
also...
literally kick his kicker?
Yes. I'm trying to remember. Was it Josh Lambeau, I think was the one? Yeah. I mean, there were issues across the board there with Urban Meyer, but...
Yeah, Boylan got that year, but also took over... mid-year, right?
Yes.
So technically he got more than 1 year. But so he was pretty bad. I mentioned Alpo Suhonen. I can't remember many one-year and out, you know, one-and-dones, right? It just doesn't happen very often.
No, it does not. And this thing was bad from the word go, too. Like, think about what Nathaniel Hackett, the introduction to Nathaniel Hackett for the rest of the NFL world, what it was. It was Monday Night Football. It was Russ against the Seahawks. It was this big game. And you thought, oh, the Seahawks, like, remember at the beginning of the season?
Oh, yeah.
People were talking about, are the Seahawks the worst team in football? Like, it was the Bears, the Texans, and the Seahawks was the cluster of three teams for the worst team in football. And you get upset by Geno Smith. Now, in hindsight, it doesn't look like a terrible loss because of what we've seen the Seahawks go out and do. But this is an unbelievably unattractive job in the sense that you're not going to have a lot of draft capital to work with. You've got a quarterback who the league
the shine is off, man.
He went from the diva of all divas too.
Yeah. I mean, he's taking two franchises down right now.
Exactly.
Right? Broncos
country,
bad.
Let's ride.
Who wants to step into that situation?
Yeah. Well, like I said, you can talk yourself into anything because you can only go up from here. And remember, I believe they, you know, I know this is kind of a skewed stat in a lot of ways. One possession losses, they're right up there at the top. I think they have three overtime losses. So you could talk yourself into, oh, if we turn around those one, but there's so many games that end in one possession losses. It's really not an informative stat, but you could talk yourself into being one. So I could see, I don't know. I can't say for sure Peyton wouldn't take it. I don't know what Peyton wants, you know?
I think Peyton wants
something better.
Yeah, something a little bit better, something a little bit more stable, and this certainly doesn't look like it right now. I think maybe the most fascinating wrinkle of this entire thing, like the headline, obviously, is Nathaniel Hackett getting fired, right? But the interim head coach for the Denver Broncos, I don't know if you saw who they promoted.
Yeah, the clock guy.
Yeah, the Time Lord. Jerry Roseberg is now the interim head coach for the remainder of the year. This guy was hired, what was it, like week three or four into the season?
Here's another part of it, Tyler. So Ojero Evero is their defensive coordinator, and he was a guy that people thought would get head coaching looks. He didn't take the job, and it's probably because he was Nathaniel Hackett's best man. They were best man at each other's wedding.
How about this thing? How about the fact that the Bears could have traded for Russell Wilson in a different world?
I want to ask Albert Breer about
that
too.
We're going to have disaster that would have been.
Yeah, we'll have Albert Breer on it at 8:35, and I'm intrigued to know how close it was to Russ becoming
a
Bear.
From
but
my sources tell me.
Oh, we got some boots on the ground reporting here, Jess.
Not really. I'm just making that up, but I don't think it was that close.
You can't just say that. Come on, Jess.
This is the Cap and J Hood show. Come on. You don't think Cap is making up sources left and right?
Oh, boy. Your word's not mine.
I'm kidding, Cap. I'm kidding.
All right. Well, don't look now, but the Green Bay Packers, very much back in the playoff mix. They have a 27% chance of making the playoffs, according to 538, after kind of smoking the Dolphins on Sunday.
They were clearly the better team in that game. By the way, I mean, Tua Tagovailoa, too. I mean, you talk about quarterbacks where the shines come off a little bit. He has struggled. And even in some of the...
He's been hit a lot.
He has. But even in some of the plays that he made, and he's in the concussion protocol once again for this week, but even some of the plays that he makes, there's still, like, he leaves some meat on the bone, too, with some of these downfield passes and the amount of chances that he has to get guys some extra yards after catch. There's some guys that... I look at Tua, and I think to myself, like, I'm kind of happy that the Bears have Justin Fields instead of Tua Tagovailoa right now. And the three interceptions, I mean, the last one was absolutely atrocious, too, for Tua. But the question here was about the Packers and their charge towards
the
playoffs now. They have
the same schedule the Bears have, yep. Minnesota
However,
and Detroit.
You go home and home to finish this thing out.
So they're going to win at least one. Let's start with that, right? Mm-hmm. They're not going to lose both at home to Minnesota and Detroit. And they might win both because... Both Minnesota and Detroit. First of all, we know Minnesota is Minnesota and Detroit on the road, albeit good, but not great. Winnable games. I don't believe in the Packers, but they might squeak in.
I mean, for all the Bears fans that have been crushing Aaron Rodgers this season.
Sylvie.
Oh, boy. This would be the ultimate kick in the nuts here if he wiggles his way into the playoffs. He doesn't even have to win. I think just even wiggling in would be a little turning of the knife for a lot of Bears fans.
I don't know what to make of the Packers, to be honest. I mean, we kind of know what Minnesota is. They're a little bit overinflated, but they do pull out wins. So I feel like this is the week that they could lose more than at home against Detroit 2 weeks from now, because Minnesota, you know, does have talent and has won a bunch of games. But I don't know what to make of Green Bay. I really don't. I don't know if they're going to – I don't know if they can go 2-0 or 0-2, but – I guess we'll find out because they're really not that good.
So as I sit here, I hike up my khakis and I go over to my touchscreen and tell you what the playoff probabilities are of all the Packers and how are they getting to get
me,
in.
Tell me.
7-8 right now. They're currently in a three-way tie with Seattle, Detroit, and themselves, obviously. But they are in that eighth spot. So you are the first team looking out, or you're tied with the first teams looking out. And right now, Seattle currently wins the tiebreaker over Detroit based on the head-to-head win. And the divisional tie initially is used to eliminate Green Bay because Detroit has the tiebreak over Green Bay right now. But that obviously can change. And then you move on to the next tiebreaker there. Washington right now is in that final spot at 7-7-1. And then the Giants at 8-6-1. So that tie that the Giants and Commanders played to a couple weeks ago is probably going to be the reason why one of those teams ends up getting in and staying in.
Any idea? What are they saying about Christian Watson? I know it's way early, but I mean, is he any idea?
I have not seen that.
Yeah,
but
they won without him. I mean, they won without him, but now you have a whole new week to prepare and everything. And I just feel like he's pretty valuable to them.
Yeah.
But look, they're playing Minnesota and Detroit at home. They're both winnable games. And I can't believe Green Bay is in it. To be honest, I just can't believe.
Three-game winning
last
streak.
These last three wins were not that impressive, but it is what it is.
Right. You beat the Bears. You beat the Rams, two of the worst teams in football right now.
And you came from behind to beat Miami. You got to give credit for that, I guess.
Yeah. They were punched in the mouth early, and they certainly came back. And even through some desperation plays, they still found a way to make it back. All right, that is Around the NFL. Coming up next, we will talk with Albert Breer here on Cap and Jay Hood. Tyler Rocky, Jesse Rogers sitting in for Cap and Jay Hood.
Cap and Jay Hood mornings on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Listening to Cap and Jay Hood at home is easier than setting your coffee maker.
This picture of domestic happiness is missing something.
Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
What a way to start the day.
Cap and Jay Hood.
On Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
Hello.
Football on ESPN 1000.
Hello, Bert.
Albert Breer.
Hey, Bert.
Senior NFL writer for SI.com joins Cap and Jay Hood.
Bert's it.
What? You're it, Bert.
On ESPN 1000.
Well, what do you mean I'm it?
Well, see, that's the game. I just tagged you, and you're it until you tag somebody else.
Albert Breer.
No, I'm not playing a game. I'm reading, Ernie, and I'm not it.
Okay.
On Chicago's home for sports.
What Bert is it?
Every Tuesday at 8:35, we get a chance to talk with Albert Breer from the Monday Morning Quarterback, senior NFL reporter at SI.com. Tyler Rocky, Jesse Rogers in for Captain Jay Hood this morning. And we welcome in Albert Breer now on ESPN 1000. Good morning, Albert. Thanks for spending some time with us here on Captain Jay Hood this morning.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We are good. Doing well. Now the conversation in Chicago has shifted because all of a sudden, after a Texans loss or a Texans win, I should say, over the weekend, the chance for the Bears to get the number one overall pick has certainly shifted. And if you look at the final schedules, I think a lot of people start to think that the Bears actually have a better chance of losing out than the Texans might over the course of the final two games here. But how valuable is that number one overall pick versus the number two overall pick in this year's draft?
I think it sort of depends on, a couple of things. Number one, how the draft process goes for the quarterbacks, right? So, I think the thing that's sort of unique about this year's class, well, it's not unique, but one thing that sort of stands out about this year's class is, there's sort of each guy has a problem that you have to kind of wrap your head around. And you have to figure out, which guy am I most comfortable with, and which flaw is either fixable or manageable. And for Bryce Young, it's size. For C.J. Stroud, it's what happens out of structure. For Will Levis, it's how raw he is. And for Anthony Richardson, again, it's how raw he is. And so with each of those guys, I think there are going to be those questions in the draft process could affect where they go, and that's going to affect the value of the number one overall pick. Then the other thing I think is just how big you see the gap being between the two defenders and which one you like more. And I think, as we get closer to the draft, I think you're going to see that really most people are going to say that the top two players overall in this year's class are probably Will Anderson and Jalen Carter. So I'd say, if you have the number one overall pick, there's the trade value piece of it. If you're the Bears, because you already have a quarterback. So how valuable can those quarterbacks get between now and the end of April? And then, then I think, the other piece of value there in the pick itself would be the difference you see between Jalen Carter and Will Anderson, where I think most people see Jalen Carter probably as a guy with a little bit higher end potential and Will Anderson a little bit of a safer pick.
Albert, another story in town, and this is just weird to me. If you open up the paper, look on ESPN.com, the headline is Bears won't shut down quarterback Justin Fields for the final two games. And look, if you're just a casual fan and I'm wondering, why is that even a topic? He's not hurt. My first thought, if I was just a fan that woke up, would be like, oh, he must be hurting that this is even a topic. So give us some national perspective. Does this come up in other cities with healthy quarterbacks on losing teams, the idea of just shutting them down, just shut them down?
Not really. I mean, I think it's probably more related to – I would think it's still related to the shoulder, right? Like in some way that – if it was bothering him in any way, you might want to shut him down so he gets a full healthy offseason. We talked about the value of a healthy offseason before, how important that is in having a guy hit the ground running. And this will be his first full offseason in a while, because of COVID at Ohio State. And, then because, obviously he went through a coaching change last year. This is going to be the first time in a while he's going to have a chance to build on the year before. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously very, very, very important. The second piece of it, the game reps are going to be important regardless, right? Like, so every experience that he gets, is something he can build on. And, I know when he was coming out of Ohio State, that was one of the main things with him was just, that he needed to play a whole lot more. And, I think that's the value in playing him the last 2 weeks, to be honest with you. It's just kind of continuing to build on his volume of experience.
I agree with that. Exactly that. Build on his volume of experience. That's a great line. I'm going to use that. Build on his volume of experience. Perfect.
You got to claim royalties on that one, Albert.
I will. Yeah, I'll Albert.
Albert Breer with us here on Cap'n Jay Hood from the Monday Morning Quarterback. So, Albert, what exactly, if you're looking at, let's say the Bears get that number one overall pick or even the number two pick, what does the trade return maybe look like if Ryan Poles does decide to move back?
Well, again, I think it just sort of depends on, what you're looking at, what the landscape is. Like, I think Bryce Young probably has the best tape. And look, like, let's start here. No one is going to trade up for Jalen Carter or Will Anderson. You know, I just, the history of the number one pick, you go back and you look at it, it just doesn't happen. If you're trading up into that area of the draft, you're doing it for a quarterback. So this is going to ride on, you know, like probably Bryce Young, but maybe Bryce Young or Will Levis or someone like that getting hot and somebody feeling like they need to go up and get them. So that's the first piece of it. That would have to happen where, you know, you would have to have one of those quarterbacks get into the area where there are multiple teams that want him. Then the second piece of it is, you know, the team that has the number two pick has to have a quarterback need, because you're going to have to give somebody else the motivation to come up and get the guy. It looks like you're going to have that piece in place with Houston. I think it's just, it's sort of, I think a lot of it sort of is to be determined. And, you know, if you go back 2 years and you look at what the Dolphins got for the third overall pick and trading back with the Niners, that was sort of a unique situation because you had a group of quarterbacks that were really, really good. You knew quarterbacks were going 1-2, and the team with the fourth pick, and Atlanta at the time had a quarterback need. Now, they didn't take one, but they had a quarterback need. So you sort of had a tension point there where you could – pressure a team to come up and get your pick. Whether or not that exists this year, I still think depends on a lot of those outside forces.
Boy, that the conversation for Bears fans between, you know, late January and April is going to be just as interesting as it has been to this point, you know, in the offseason. It'll be so interesting. Yeah. Let's pull back a little, Albert, and talk about George Payton, because that's my question. We're not doing sports radio in Denver, but like, it was so bad for Hackett. Do you start to question the guy that made the decision to hire him? And by the way, Payton started his career here in Chicago back in 2000 or 1997 even. And he's the GM of the Broncos now. I mean, do you start to question, do players start to question the sort of authority that Payton has after making such a bad pick?
Well, The landscape in Denver is going to be sort of determined by the head coach, by whoever they hire as the head coach. And I think if you look at the statement that the new ownership put out yesterday, it's interesting to look at the details of it. You know, they did mention George and his name was in there, but they didn't say he was going to lead in the head coaching search. They said he was going to assist the new CEO, Greg Penner, in the head coach search. So what that tells me is, they're going to listen to George. They're going to consult with George. George is going to be part of this, and George isn't going to be fired right now. But at the end, it's going to be the CEO that's going to make the hire. And so the CEO could look for somebody who can work with George, and somebody like Dan Quinn, who has background with George. He could, you know, go hire somebody that he feels like he could pair with George, like a D'Amico Ryans or a Gerard Mayo. Or, you know, he could go out and get the sort of head coach who might want his own sort of program there, like a Jim Harbaugh. And so that's what I think is interesting about the way that this whole thing was set up yesterday by the Broncos, where they say he's going to assist in the head coaching search, not necessarily lead it, where Greg Penner is going to lead the head coaching search. I think a lot of George Payton's future in Chicago is going to come down to whether or not the head coach, whoever that is going to have the power to push him out, or is going to have the power to, you know, basically bring in their own general manager. So I still think there's a lot to be determined there.
Let me follow up on that. I mean, isn't it time for Denver to just like get someone that knows what they're doing? They've really cycled through some coaches. I mean, as good as Vic Fangio is as a defensive coordinator, I think people could have predicted he's probably better in that role than a head coach.
Yeah.
Vance Joseph.
I think the big thing is having somebody who can stand up and push back with Russell Wilson. You know,
there you go. Like,
I think that was part of the problem with Nathaniel Hackett. I still think Nate's a really good coach. You know, and I think, you know, in another situation, he might have been really good.
Okay.
I look back at this and look, we all have the benefit of hindsight, and I probably wouldn't have said this stuff in July or August. You know what I mean? But you look at it now, and it's you have Russell Wilson coming over from Seattle, and in Seattle, Russell Wilson wanted things that he didn't get, right? Like, he wanted the offense run a certain way. He wanted things set up a certain way. He wanted to have, I think, the power that a Tom Brady has in Tampa, right? Didn't have any of that. So he gets traded, and now, like, he, you know, has some power over where he's going to be traded. He can say no. He's got the no-trade clause. And he's able to kind of get what he wants from a logistical standpoint in Denver. Well, that puts whoever the head coach is in a little bit of a tough spot, especially if that head coach is a first-time head coach. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think there were things that needed to happen in Denver this year that didn't happen because Russell had too much power. And so I think one of the things that's going to be important here for Greg Penner and the new ownership group is finding somebody who can push back on Russell Wilson. And that's why I think, like, Jim Harbaugh's name is a good one. You know, Sean Payton is too. I don't know if Sean would want to go there and work with the quarterback, but Sean Payton would be one. You need to find somebody, and that's why I bring up the ex-players too, and guys like D'Amico Ryans and Gerard Mayo. Like, you need somebody coming in there who is not going to be subservient to Russell, because we already know what that looks like. We've seen what that looks like over the last 3 months. And so I think it's going to be important for them to find somebody, first and foremost, who has the sort of leverage in the organization to push back on Russell Wilson.
Albert Breer from the Monday Morning Quarterback with us here on Cap'n Jay Hood. So it's funny, the Bears have played three teams and this season where the talking points surrounding those games are, oh, the Bears need to build like this team. It's the Dolphins, the Bills, and the Eagles. And a lot of it all centers around finding that number one wide receiver. How are the Bears going to find that number one wide receiver? What does that plan look like for the Bears moving forward?
It's really hard because I think, you know, if you look at like the guys who've been traded or drafted in the last few years, you can get lucky. You know, you can wind up with a Justin Jefferson in the 20s. But generally, if you look at it, you're either going to have to take them really high. And there isn't one of those every year, right? Like, you're going to have to take one really high, like the Bengals did with Ja'Marr Chase. Or you're going to have to give up a boatload of capital to go and get one. And chances are that guy's going to be older, right? So, like, you look at
Hopkins.
You know, you look at a Tyreek Hill last year. He was on his third contract. You look at Devontae Adams on his third contract. A.J. Brown's a little different, but remember that trade materialized really, really late in the process. You know what I mean? Like that was on draft day. So, you know, I think, you know, it's going to take being willing to fork over something valuable to go and get the guy. And like, do you want to go and get DeAndre Hopkins? You might be able to get him a little cheaper, but it's going to be, you know, on the contract that he's on. Are you willing, you know, if one of these situations, the sort of situation with Tyreek or Devontae pops up this year, are you willing to give up multiple first round picks and a big contract to go and get a guy? You know, I think that that's sort of the operative question here, because if you look at it over the last couple of years, the way teams have gone and gotten these sorts of receivers is by spending high-end capital to go and do it. And, you know, I think if you look at the rookies coming into the league this year, who's going to be in the draft class this year, there isn't a Ja'Marr Chase. You know what I mean? Like, so I think you're going to have to get a little creative to find a guy who can be a true number one. You know, and then I think, of course, you hope Chase Claypool develops into something that he really hasn't been so far with the Bears.
Albert, what would it cost to get, like, a Mike Evans?
I think that obviously that something like that depends on, you know, what Tom Brady's going to do. You know what I mean? Like, is Tom Brady back in Tampa? If he's not, like, I do think, like, somebody like that, where you look at him and he's on the back end of his career, you could probably get him for less than a first-round pick. Now, the question is how much you think he has left in the tank, right? Like, and so, you know, then you'd be pairing him with Chase Claypool. How long does that last, you know? And I believe Mike Evans, I want to say this is his ninth year in the league, right? So, like, he's got mileage. So I think you'd have to be comfortable with that being sort of more of a Band-Aid. You know, like, Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill were still young enough where you could say, okay, like maybe they won't be here forever, but we're going to have them for 3 or 4 years. I don't think, like, well, I don't know, watching Mike Evans, that you would count on that, you know? And even a DeAndre Hopkins, who's had a lot of injuries and who's been beat up, like, I think, like, Hopkins and Evans would be a little bit more in the Band-Aid category, where you look at it and say, okay, we're going to have these guys for a couple years here while we figure out who our long-term number one is going to be.
Albert Breer from the Monday Morning Quarterback, thanks so much for joining us here on Cap'n Jay Hood.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well, Albert. When we come back, Jesse, one of the strangest things I've seen in baseball happened over the weekend. We will talk about that next here on Cap'n Jay Hood.
Cap'n Jay Hood mornings on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. It's Cap and J-Hood on Chicago's Home for Sports. Follow the show on Twitter at CapJHood. This is ESPN 1000.
Jesse Rogers with you in for Captain Jay Hood this morning. Hope everyone had a nice long holiday weekend. And Jesse, one of the things that we saw over the holiday weekend was Carlos Correa. And the deal with the Mets may now be in jeopardy after there are some concerns about Correa's latest physical with the Mets. Remember, that's why he is not a San Francisco Giant right now at the price of 13 years, $350 million. But what is going on right now with Carlos Correa?
Yeah, I had to write about it at ESPN.com over the weekend. Sort of broke up the holiday festivities when that news came out. Look, teams agree on contracts, and then the player has to pass a physical for it to become official. This happens all the time. 99.9% of the time, the player does pass the physical. Once in a while, it doesn't happen. And I have a feeling moving forward with these decade-long deals, we might see this happen a little bit more often. Teams get a little cautious after their doctors look at the medical reports because, obviously, you're sort of trying to figure out what this guy's going to look like a decade from now or 10 years or 12 years from now, 13 years from now. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's going on here. We don't know all the details because they're with medical stuff, a lot of it's private. Some of it leaks out. But it's pretty obvious now two sets of team doctors have looked at his reports, supposedly on his right lower leg where he's had a pin placed in there and stuff, and thought the same thing, meaning, yes, a short-term deal is okay, but this leg, and I'm just assuming this is what they're saying, we don't know this for sure, that leg's going to give out in 8 years, in 9 years, in 7 years, in 10 years, whatever the number is, they're not signing off on the length of the deal. Remember, he passed a physical with Minnesota last year, but that was a shorter-term deal. So this has to be about 8, 9, 10 years from now. And so there's a couple, solutions to this is either the Mets or some other team gives him a shorter deal where the doctors sign off on 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, whatever the number is, or they remain with the 12 years and they say, look, if you miss significant time because of this specific injury, you don't have guaranteed dollars. But this does come up every so often in a physical. I think it'll happen more often with 10 or 11 or 12 year deals like these guys are getting that doctors have to project. And when you see two sets of team doctors do this, Tyler, it certainly raises some red flags because doctors can interpret medical information differently. That's why people get second and third opinions. So for all we know, the Mets were going to sign off completely on it. But it sounds like they have the same kind of concerns the Giants do. And again, I have to put all these caveats on it because we don't know all the answers to this. We just know there's a delay, and it sounds like it's a similar situation as to what happened in San Francisco.
So how does this end? Does this end with Correa getting a 1 or 2 year deal, maybe with an opt out on it? Like, is he going to be a Met on opening day?
I think he will be. I think the deal gets reworked in some manner, as I mentioned. I think Scott Boras lost a little patience with the Giants when they said they wanted to rework it. But now that two teams, and one of them being the Mets, who really are willing to go to the,
they're the ATM machine right now. They're Mets.
I think he ends up a Met. My guess is it's a shorter-term deal or the language is reworded somewhat. I think the shorter-term deal is probably it. Now, the difference between 12 years and 9 years isn't like I can't imagine a doctor say this leg's giving out in 12 years, but it's not going to give out in nine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think the jump has to be bigger than that.
Right.
So could it go from 12 to six? I think that's a possibility, or the language gets reworked for the longer deal. But I don't know. Right now things are kind of buttoned up because it involves medical information. All I know is when I wrote about it, I got a one text source from someone, sentence from a source that said, we're trying to work through it.
All right. Well, that's the latest with Carlos Correa.
Yeah.
And really a very strange story that came out over the weekend. And Bears fans, they saw the failed physical.
Well, it was even stranger
Larry
going back to a week. Yeah, even stranger a week ago when it came out with San Francisco, right?
And the fact that he flipped teams and the saga continues.
Yeah,
the Carlos Correa mystery. Here we go.
Yeah, you can't be shocked.
Yeah. All right, coming up in 2 minutes, Ryan Poles has made a number of big moves. Great piece in The Athletic from Adam Johns evaluating the big decisions that Ryan Poles has made in 2022. We will go through that when we come back here. Tyler Rocky and Jesse Rogers in for Cap and Jay Hood.
Cap and Jay Hood. Mornings on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.